It's NPR's All Things Considered. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The Internet has become a primary source for music among college students across the country. MP3s, compressed computer files that allow Internet users to download high-quality recordings, are becoming more popular than store-bought CDs among cash-strapped students because they can download MP3s for free. The phenomenon has become so widespread that the record industry is going back to college with lawyers in tow. NPR's Guy Raz visited the University of Virginia in Charlottesville, and he has this report.
Check out sophomore Sam Ross's dorm room for a crash course in Internet music technology. Sam wades through the clothes on the floor and makes his way to his desk. A massive industrial-strength computer lords over the stapler, pens, and notebooks squeezed around it. It's the most important thing in his room because the computer doubles as Sam's stereo system.
Let's say my friend's into Frank Zappa. I said, Sam, you should get into Zappa. Well, I don't know where to start. If I go to the store, I go to Tower Records and buy some CDs, it's probably going to be pretty cracked, and I'm going to be a miserable customer. But you go to the All Music guy, type in Zappa, and you click on Frank Zappa, and he gives you a bio with his sort of crazy, forlorn picture, and then every album he's ever done, including reviews. And I can go straight from there online to Napster and download the songs.
Napster. Everywhere you walk on campus, you'll hear about it.
It provides a means of getting at MP3 files. Essentially, it's one gigantic directory, and people who sign on, they create an index of everything they have. And you suddenly, as more and more people get on, it creates this humongous index, such that I'm online right now, and there are 259,025 separate songs, all of which are online and accessible by me.
But most of those songs in this program are pirated copies. Napster doesn't distribute the music or store it. It just tells you who's made the song available for downloading. Imagine walking into Central Park, walking up to an information booth, asking where to buy drugs, and being directed to the location. That's Napster. So, say you love the song Blue Suede Shoes, and you want Elvis singing it, but you don't want to buy the whole album. Sam Ross demonstrates what to do.
I'm going to type in Elvis in Blue, and then wait for while it does a search. And here we go, it just popped up. I got Elvis Presley's Blue Moon, Elvis Presley's Blue Christmas, Elvis Presley's Blue Suede Shoes. I can get any of this. And before you know it, I've got the whole song right now. Done. Do you want to hear it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go.
And a crystal clear version of the song kicks out of the speakers, straight from the Internet.
Well, it's one for the money, two for the show. But if you get ready now, go, cat, go. But don't you step on my blue suede shoes. Well, you can do anything, but then get over my blue suede shoes.
The school Thomas Jefferson founded in 1819 is now, like most campuses across the country, wired to be the community of the future. Every student who decides to live on campus has access to the fastest internet connections available. Early 19th century brick colonial buildings are now cyber centers. Across campus from Sam's dorm, a sorority pledge class engages in some obscure traditions, while other students filter in and out of the nearby library. Like the campus itself, all of these students are wired. These sorority girls, jocks, bookish liberal arts majors, slackers, international students, just about everybody on campus uses Napster. It's almost as if the language of internet music is some kind of secret that students share and keep from the outside world.
On average, I spend maybe about 4 or 5 hours a week, looking at for random music that I happen to prefer on the radio and want to research a little more.
I used to spend a lot of money on CDs and stuff, and now it's just so much easier to just go on like these NASP, and it takes like 10 seconds per song, or you can get on like this, like, compared to computers, you can just download like 20 of them in a minute or something.
Yeah, I still listen to like MP3s and stuff more than I do my CDs.
Definitely, I hardly put my stereo on at all, it's just shit there, really.
One of the professors at UVA, Brian Pfaffenberger, teaches media studies and writes a column about this technology for LinuxJournal.com. He has his own theory about why this stuff took off so quickly.
One of the problems that students see with the traditional system of music distribution is that you have a few acts funneled through this very capitalistically oriented distribution and recording system, but there might be some music out there that's really awesome that's not getting heard.
Cut Your Hair by Pavement, the archetypal 90s slacker anthem, pumps off the internet into the corridor of a freshman dorm. Matt Fleming pops his head out of his room to explain why the internet has become his primary source for music.
A lot of the music I listen to doesn't get much radio play because it's on smaller labels. So, like, that was a real good way to listen to stuff beforehand and find out about music that, you know, I didn't know about.
Many students at UVA simply leave their stereo systems at home. They spend the money on top-shelf speakers, download a week's worth of music, hit random play on their computer, and repeat the process over when one set of songs becomes tiresome. Freshman Ann Dittmeyer.
You can basically hear whatever you want, whenever you want, and get it somehow.
But maybe not for long.
It's going to be coming to the courts, yeah.
A short walk down Route 29, Edmund Kitch teaches intellectual property rights at UVA's law school.
If you distribute a whole lot of infringing copies of copyrighted works, you're committing a crime. And if you're convicted, you go to jail.
Kitch looks up the copyright code. He offers this example. Say someone uploads a CD to the internet so that other people can copy it, and the disc has a retail value of $10. The minute more than 100 people download that disc, the person who uploaded the disc is committing a felony, even if that person isn't making money by doing it. It could be said, then, that the freshman dorms at UVA house the most concentrated collection of unindicted criminals in Charlottesville. Media studies professor Brian Pfaffenberger asked if he could send them a message.
Don't think for a minute that you're living under some sort of protected envelope that's going to shield you from this kind of rather frightening and indeed almost totalitarian surveillance that may happen when the lawyers start showing up and pounding on the doors and threatening lawsuits.
Some schools have actually decided to take the initiative. During the day when armies of lawyers do descend upon the ivory towers, Northwestern University decided to block access to Napster. So did the University of Illinois, the place where web browsers were invented. A few months ago, a student at the University of Oregon was sentenced to 2 years probation on charges of digital music piracy. Carnegie Mellon University suspended 70 students who posted pirated MP3 files on the net. And the Recording Industry Association of America threatened a lawsuit against the University of South Carolina after discovering that a student there was selling pirated MP3s. In an effort to stop the anarchy, the recording industry has filed suit against Napster and MP3.com. Still, as Professor Pfaffenberger points out, it's virtually impossible for the recording industry to monitor computer activity at every campus. And legal threats or none, students are collectively thumbing their noses at the industry while looking for the latest music for free.
Unsure what the balance held, I touched my belly overwhelmed.
Guy Raz, NPR News, Charlottesville, Virginia.
But then an angel came one day, told me to kneel down and say,
this is NPR's All Things Considered.